Welcome to PCMC and welcome back to The Matrix. I'm joined once again by Janine Gagliardi.
That's right.
Janine, how are you?
I'm good.
You feeling good after the 2-hour episode we did last week?
Oh, we're chugging along.
We're still not done with The Matrix. No, we are talking about The Animatrix from 2003.
That's right. Same year everything else came out.
this is a series of 9 short animated films. But like 4 were released on the Matrix website. The Flight of Osiris was in theaters before the movie
Reloaded?
Dreamfinder.
Dreamfinder?
A Dreamcatcher.
Oh, Dreamcatcher.
The Stephen King movie.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh wow.
They were not collected as one thing until the DVD release.
Okay.
But now on HBO it's shown as one thing. We're famous for our Love, Death, and Robot episodes.
That's right. This is so, I texted you, I was like, this is just proto Love, Death, and Robots.
It's crazy. Just little shorts of
humans and the machines and
the animation, and some are sexy, some are interesting, some are mind-bendy, and different art styles, way less CGI back then. There's really just one CGI one.
Yeah.
But it's all interesting. It's all really interesting stuff.
I love that about this.
Yeah.
I think a ton of inspiration here for the Love, Death, and Robots creators.
Absolutely. Did you see
this
before?
The cold brew's kicking in. I'm back.
We're drinking cold brews.
Both of us are like, we need to caffeinate. This is such a long episode.
Had you seen this before?
I had seen the Haunted House one.
Okay.
That was the only one I'd seen. And it was like, I think I saw it like late at night on Adult Swim or something.
Okay. Yeah, they definitely played this on Adult Swim. Yeah,
or maybe MTV. I'm not sure. But it was like,
Adult Swim definitely played
this,
the Animatrix.
Okay. So I saw that one's called Beyond.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait, isn't this supposed to be a Matrix thing? Like, I didn't get how it was related to the Matrix, because the Matrix was not fresh in my mind at all. And now I'm seeing like, oh, the whole place is just like a glitch. It's an anomaly. Right. It's cool. But that's the only one I've seen. And I think it might be my favorite one still.
I'm not sure if it's my favorite one.
I really enjoyed it this time around. I was like, oh, this is so much fun.
I think the ones that are further away
from the movies are the most interesting.
The ones that are sort of directly tied into the movies are not as good. The final Flight of the Osiris, which is basically like a little prequel short to Matrix Reloaded, that I think is the worst one. And they probably spent the most money on it because it's CG.
It's all CG. Yeah.
And for 2003, it's pretty good. But it's just not, there's no theme to it. It's really just like, this is what happens right before Matrix Reloaded.
Yeah.
Whereas the others are like films. They've got themes, they've got things to say, and some of them change, things that, some of them are not faithful really to things. Like the one with the guy who's a runner. In that one, the agents have like smocks on. Yes. Yes.
I was like, this is nuts. Like,
I love that, though, that he runs out of it.
Yes. Okay.
That's such a cool idea.
It is so cool. That was the one that Bill saw. I don't know if he saw the whole thing, but when I was saying, like, oh, we're going to watch The Animatrix, he was like, oh, my God, the runner one. And I was like, what are you talking about?
That's the one that stuck out in my mind,
it's
too.
Very cool. All right. We'll go through it because they're all interesting. They have their... That one is very cool. That's probably my second favorite one.
The first two were a two-parter called The Second Renaissance and The Second Renaissance Part 2. And to contradict what I just said before, this is directly related. But actually, this is really cool because this is the backstory of the Matrix. This is literally like, this is how the Matrix happened.
Uh-huh.
It tells the story of how the Machine Uprising happened, mm-hmm. which we, you know, we
you we only create these like very humanoid looking robots,
right?
They're machines that they work for us.
We make them in our own image, mm-hmm. which is interesting because once they find their own power, they don't look like us anymore. Yeah, they start looking like insects,
mm-hmm. insects, squids. They look like all different things.
But like, yeah, you in the beginning you see like one is like a little dandy waiter.
And I was like, pardon me. It's funny. It's like the people are boorish and rude, which I think coming from like an anime culture is enough because I feel like Japanese culture is so polite.
Well, and you know.
That it's like, this is horrible behavior.
Yeah. Given what the film, how the film looks at the machines compared to the humans.
Mm-hmm. It's a sympathetic eye.
Yeah. This makes the humans look bad.
Oh, very much so. When they're at war and there's just like piles of human bodies, it's still the humans look deranged when they're fighting,
right? And according to this, the machines just wanted to be on their own. Like, they wanted to have peace, mm-hmm. and the humans wouldn't let them.
They wouldn't let them. They kept it they start this nation called 01, and it's because the machines become too powerful, they gain the power to create their own nation. And because, of course, of like machines don't need rest and they are basically just factories, they are hugely economically successful. Like, they make everything in the whole world and they ship things. And because they're becoming too powerful, the major powers in the world, like the U.S., you figure, among them, have all these trade embargoes and like block their ships and do all kinds of stuff to mess with their success.
They come to the UN to ask for peace.
Yeah.
And they're like attacked.
They're physically attacked by people in the UN, which is wild. And there's like a lot of this whole sequence reminds me of what was it called in Love, Death and Robots? The the Fox Lady?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it reminds me of that. There's this one where I'm not sure if she's a sex worker, but she's like a female, like skinned robot. It was so disturbing. It was
that
so disturbing.
Me too.
Screaming. Like they're savagely beating a woman. It does not look like a robot or a machine.
Right. And then at one point they hit her and her skin comes off. But she's then
like
screaming.
Her breasts are out. Like she's like. Just, I was horrified. I was like, oh my God, what is this part? This is not part of it. And she screams, I'm real, before they like bash her head in.
And that reminded me of Rene Descartes, who we were talking about in the last episode, right? Because Descartes famously said, cognito ergo sum, I think therefore I am.
Yeah.
If I think I'm real, or if I can question, am I real? That means I am.
Mm-hmm.
So her being like, I'm real, not even like I'm alive. She says, I'm real. And they kill her.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, that was so disturbing and powerful.
Mm-hmm.
But we should say, actually, this is directed by Mahiro Maeda. He worked on stuff like One Punch Man, the Evangelion movies, Kill Bill, and Shin Godzilla.
Mm.
Before the war begins, though, there's a trial. There's
it's like very iRobot.
Yeah.
He savagely murders. Like it's hype. This one is hyper violent.
Yeah, it is.
He murders the family he works for. He's like a butler. Because
they were going to destroy him, and he didn't want to die.
He didn't want to die, so he killed the family. But he like pops their brains out of their heads, and it's super violent. It's like you have a hydraulic press working for you that can crush you at any time.
Right. And it's interesting. They talk about like, you know, they get to so much more than like when Morpheus explains it in the film, it's like very, very simple.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas like they get to so much here. Like there are liberal people that are like,
let the machines
be like,
free.
Like what, you know, the whole trial is this big deal.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. It's like the OJ trial, but it's this robot.
And it seems like we're at a point at the beginning where we're not working at all. Like they're doing all the labor and we're just chilling, enjoying everything in life.
Yeah.
And he just wants to live. Like he just, I didn't want to not live anymore. Mm-hmm. And they were going to kill me.
Mm-hmm. Do we know why?
It just said that they were just going to destroy it. And they were its property. So therefore they have a right to destroy
it. Right. It's like throwing
you.
Out an old vacuum cleaner or something. Yeah.
We should say that there's a wraparound thing with this one where It's supposed to be like what you're seeing is
Zion's archives. Yeah.
But it's this really interesting, like a very, it looks like Hindu inspired.
Yeah, like a Hindu goddess, yeah, sort of. Yeah,
who's like, who's
like nude, but it's like, right, a, it's very anime sort of,
yeah,
thing.
She's like, I guess, the interface, yeah, of the Zion computer, yeah, that's showing you all,
like,
this
you're
stuff
in the mainframe or something, yeah, of the Zion archives.
There's, yeah, this sort of gorgeous animation. Everything in this, these are all gorgeous, but it's got pale hues. There's grays and browns. There's very pale, sort of not very colorful.
Yeah.
There's almost, it almost reminds me a little bit of Soviet montage, because there's a lot of like real like figurative juxtaposition of images.
Okay.
Like there's a really great scene where the humans come up with this idea to like, oh, well, they're mostly solar powered, so if we get rid of the sun, we could win.
Great idea.
And you see like, you know, see an image of like a human clapping, but then it shows like a skeleton clapping.
Mm.
And then, like, they show, like, a man on a horse and then an image of a robot on a robot horse. Like, there's a lot of, like, real Soviet montage style, like, figurative, just figurative images,
yeah,
juxtaposed
like
together.
Yeah, the, like, horsemen of the apocalypse. Like, this was the decision that ended the world, basically.
Right. And I thought it was awesome. And I took a screenshot of it and I sent it to you.
Yeah, like, you were like, sick.
It was awesome.
There's, like, a guitar solo. I was like, ding your nanny.
Yeah,
I needed more of that in there. I need some rocking guitar riffs. I thought it was interesting how they blacked out the sky. They just put like fighter jets in,
yeah,
smoke. I don't,
yeah,
know what that was.
Yeah.
Who cares? It was fun.
We did it.
We did it. We did it. We beat the machines. Yeah, but then the machines were like, don't worry about it. We'll figure it out. We'll use you guys' batteries,
right,
instead.
Now you'll be the fucking...
Mm-hmm.
And like... That's disturbing too, because they just show them just picking up human bodies from the battlefield and just like plugging them in, and they're just screaming.
Yeah.
We're just screaming. Like I said this in the last episode, mm-hmm, it seems like once the humans.
Like a humane, well, I'm using air quotes that you can't see, but a humane solution
would be the Matrix.
Yeah, to what was the alternative, like, which is like think, living torture.
We're still sucking your life out of you,
yeah,
but you'll
but
think
you won't
you're
worry
like
about
living,
it.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. You'll think you're living in a fine, you know.
Unless you're in the second one. You're just scary monsters all
around.
Yeah,
yeah, that's spooky monsters. Lots of Count Chocula's. Do they go, I'm not, do they go to Africa? They say something.
They go to the Cradle of Life, they said.
Where
we went
is
to,
that?
That's in Africa.
Yeah. Yeah. I was, so it's really interesting.
01 is in Africa. Yeah. Which, I mean, I don't know how much you want to read into this, but if the robots are slaves,
yeah,
right, then it's sort of like the post-Civil War, like Return to Africa movement.
Yeah.
Where that's how the nation Liberia was formed.
Right.
There was a contingent of former slaves who wanted to return to the homeland. So I was sort of like, okay.
It could also represent
could
like
follow you there,
a birth,
I guess,
of a new life form.
It's a right. I took it more as like the cradle of life. Like this is the cradle. Now it's going to be the cradle of like machine life as well.
There's also shades of Terminator in here. Right, because
mm-hmm,
Terminator. I mean, it's this is these are sci-fi tropes. You know, you talked about Asimov, mm-hmm, iRobot, like the idea of we create AI, mm-hmm, and then at some point it wants its own
it wants freedom, right, of choice, right?
Right, yeah, right. It's alive and whatever.
I mean, it's Frankenstein.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So this is in two parts, just because it's long. Like, there's not really a difference between the first and second,
yeah,
part.
Yeah, it's sort of like how we got here, parts one and two, but it's like pre-war,
yeah,
and then post-war.
It's actually, I think, a really good companion to The Matrix.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just...
I think it fills in a lot of blanks.
Yeah, yeah.
If and we're taking it as canon, and we're supposed to.
I think so.
All the additional supplemental stuff, and this is stuff we were talking about in the last episode, like with the Matrix cutscenes,
yeah,
is signed off by the Wachowskis.
Yeah.
Like, they have their hand in it, and it's meant to be considered canon, like,
yeah,
for instance, the reason, so like Niobe is in Resurrection, she's a 92 year old woman or something,
which I liked, by the way.
Yeah, yeah, I screamed Jaina when she came on screen,
right? I wasn't expecting her.
Yeah, no, I wasn't either. I was really delighted. But the reason Morpheus isn't there, besides the fact that he'd be like 100 years old, is because there was an MMO, I don't know if it's an MMO. I guess they're all MMORPGs, but I don't know. It's like an MMO game that came out, I want to say like 2007 or so, in which Morpheus goes to find Neo's body to get it back from the machines. Like, he believes Neo to be dead and goes to, well, I mean, at that point he was dead.
Yeah.
And goes to the machine source to get his body back. And in it, he dies. And so that's canon. That's part of the canon. That's a story I don't know at all.
No, I don't know that either.
But that's another reason why Morpheus isn't alive in this one.
Okay.
Yeah.
By this one, you mean part four.
Part four of Resurrections.
Right.
So, but yeah, it fills in a lot of the blanks like a lot of the supplemental materials do. I'm very anti-supplemental materials from most of my pop culture. I feel like you should be able to enjoy it on its own. I feel like you can do that with the first Matrix. But having been on this journey, I do enjoy all of the supplemental things that the Matrix has to offer.
Yeah, yeah, me too.
I've become a real Matrix head on this journey.
Me too. I've become a real Wachowski head.
I don't know that I'm going to follow you there, but I appreciate it. I might watch Jupiter Ascending just to have like a fun bad time.
Don't watch that. Watch Bound. Watch
Bound's like good.
Speed Racer.
Though. Oh yeah, I've seen Speed Racer.
Bound is funny. You look at Bound and they could have had the same career as like Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah,
because it's like this. Yeah. The fact that they would like they go from
and
Bound
like around
to
the same
Matrix
time too, right?
Like
when he was doing Pulp Fiction and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a crazy leap.
Yeah, right?
I'm like surprised they wrote that movie considering all the stuff they did after it.
We didn't talk about this last week, but the fact that Matrix 4 is only one of the Wachowskis and not both.
Yes.
I think is interesting. And in some places I feel like
Do you miss the other siblings?
When there's
influence?
So much there's so many things in the movie of like Neo and Trinity working together and flying together. I was like, Is Lana expressing that she misses Lily?
Yeah.
That she wished Lily had come with her on this journey?
Aw.
Because it is weird. I mean, they together created this thing, and now only one of them is doing this.
Yeah.
Will they go back to working together, or have they split?
I don't think it seems like acrimonious at all. I mean, granted, I didn't hear any tone because I read it in print, but it seemed like Lily was supportive, but just like, this is not what she's interested in doing right now.
Right, I'm totally done with this.
Yeah. Which I think is fair. The reality, right? The actual real world thing that's happened is their parents died five weeks apart from each other, which is seriously traumatic. You know, very close thing. And whether or not they did this film about grief together, they still had to grieve their parents.
Right.
And that was an experience they had together.
Right.
So I don't know that it's necessarily, you know, something that Lily needed to do to process the grief, but they still had to process the grief.
Right.
And they did it as siblings. Like, you'll always be a sibling. So I don't know.
Did you watch Cloud Atlas?
I did not.
Watching.
I haven't seen a single thing.
It's
that
so fucking
done
good.
Besides every single Matrix thing that they did.
I've seen everything in the last like month except Sense8, the series that they did. But I've heard good things about that. And apparently apparently a lot of the Sense8 cast is in the new Matrix movie. Like, I think Bugs was in that.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah, yeah. Very sexy.
Mm.
All right. So speaking of sexy, let's get back to the Animatrix.
Ooh, okay. Are we going to move on from Renaissance?
Yeah, unless you have more to say about it.
One of my criticisms is the titles aren't very good.
Okay, sure.
Like, Program is the next one.
Yeah, I agree.
Mm. I mean, there's still like nothing to it. Luckily, there's more to the shorts than the titles would suggest.
Yeah, you don't get anything from
it. You don't get anything.
Oh, well, you know, but since
like if you told me Program, I'd be like, which one is that?
Since we're talking about titles, what do you think of the title The Renaissance or The Second Renaissance?
The Second Renaissance. The Renaissance is rebirth, right?
Right.
That's what it means. So it's the rebirth of this class. This group of objects that then decide to become subjects.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's appropriate. It's like, because the Renaissance, even though it doesn't mean awakening, it was an awakening, right? It's after the Dark Ages.
Right,
so this
is
after like the machine Dark Ages.
Whose Renaissance is it? Is it it's the machine's Renaissance, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not human's Renaissance.
Not the human's Renaissance, certainly not.
All right. So the next one is Program.
Yeah.
This is directed by Yoshiaki Kawajiri.
Okay.
He worked on Ninja Scroll, Kimba the White Lion, which is what Lion King is completely taken from. And Gatchaman.
Okay.
There's a lot of, it's like the creme de la creme of anime people. There's a lot of good anime people that they got to work on this. Mm. And we were saying in the last episode, anime always had its fans from like the 70s onward in America. Yeah. But it was not accepted the way it is now. Mm-mm. I mean, now it's a big part of American culture, whereas it wasn't then. So it's like, this was, you know, it's cool that they brought over these people and like gave them opportunities to do stuff here.
This is very Japanese influenced.
Super. It's feudal. It's they're, like feudal, they're samurais. Japan. Yeah.
They look like samurais.
It's a program in the Matrix.
Yeah. And you understand that right away. Like they're in a simulation, but it's like a training simulation she's doing. There's a female samurai as the main character. She looks like Princess Mononoke. Like she's got like, I don't know what that must be traditional like Japanese like headdress or something, because it's featured so heavily in like anime, but I don't know what that is, and I love it. It's like almost like a fur collar something. It's great, and she's wearing that, and her companion in the simulation is, he looks like she's just like a samurai.
Yeah. He's got the face covering, right?
Yeah. And he's basically giving her the cipher speech. Like he's gonna leave the Matrix.
And leave with me.
Yeah, leave, come with me. Come out with me.
Right. What is reality?
Mm-hmm.
What's real doesn't matter. What's important is how we live our lives, is something he says. This short has a very hand-painted look.
Mm-hmm.
It has a limited palette, which a couple of these shorts have.
Yeah.
This one is basically just red, white, and black with small little touches of brown and dark blues. Mm-hmm. But it's mostly red, white, and black.
Mm-hmm.
And as they're sort of talking as they're fighting, but they're not going to hurt each other, because it's like the kung fu fight between Morpheus and Neo. It's like a training thing.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever see that short of the two kids breaking up on the phone?
Uh-uh.
Oh my God, it's amazing. I don't know how I've never shown it to you. It reminded me of that. There's this short that came a few years ago, and it's the same. It's two samurais fighting.
Okay.
But the soundtrack is a contemporary phone call of a boy and girl who are breaking up.
Okay.
And it's incredible. Sorry, I don't remember the name of it. But I don't know. If you know the name, drop it in our... just DM me. let me ask you about their names.
Okay. I don't remember their names, so tell me.
They're very interesting. His name is Duo.
Duo. That was it. Okay. Yes.
Her name is Cis, like S-C-I-S, like cisgendered. So Cis and Duo.
Weird.
So duo means like two.
Two, yeah.
And does cis mean one, or does cis
root mean?
Yeah, that's what I want to know.
Okay, well, I guess we can look it up.
What?
The root word cis and its variants sid and side come from the Latin root, which means to cut or kill.
So why do we say cisgender?
Prefix cis, word forming element meaning, quote, on the near side of, on this side. From the Latin preposition cis, on this side. Oh, okay. That makes more sense.
Uh-huh.
On this side. So, okay.
Well, he's trying to convince her.
The stem of this demonstrative pronoun meaning this, as opposed to trans or ultra. So like transgressive, right? So cis is like this side. I guess that's why it became like an antonym of trans. Because it's like one side and then one. Yeah. So I guess cis then would be.
She's loyal to humans.
Yeah.
Because
she's on this side.
And like Duo Cypher, like he made a deal with the machines.
Okay. So then I would take their names rather than having it be like a gender.
No, I don't think it's a gender thing, but I think.
Being she's loyal and he's
to
not.
To humanity.
Yeah. And he's double agent.
Right.
So Duo being double. Yeah.
Okay. Yes. He's like, I made a deal with the machines. Come with me. There's a few cool things of like he's manipulating the program, so like, and then but she is too, like she creates a bunch of doors between them that he has to like cut down the doors. When she says I'm not gonna go with you, he's like, well then I have to kill you, and he jumps at her with his katana like he's gonna cut her. Once he gets to her, right, he looks and it's in slow motion, he's like, you see the sword coming down, he's gonna cut her. She grabs it with her hands, turns her wrist, snaps the point off of the sword, and then jabs him in the throat with it. And it's great. And
it's then cool
his
thing.
Red blood sort of matches the red sky and everything else. And then there's a twist ending.
Right. It's simulation.
Right. It was
like a training in a training.
Yes.
So it wasn't a real person. It's a training program, but it was never a real person to begin with.
But what's really interesting and not totally consistent with what we already know about the Matrix is it reminded me of it's a simulation that you believe.
Yeah, she believed that Duo was a person.
And that she had a relationship with him. It's like the Rick and Morty, the the Life Well Lived video game.
Yes.
Where Morty wakes up, he's like, oh, my wife.
My wife, oh my God. Yeah.
Like she
believed she was in a relationship.
Right,
with
when
Duo.
She was in that mm-hmm. thing, she believed it.
Yeah. And they're like, you passed the test. By the way, she's wearing the Sigourney Weaver
panties.
Outfit. Yeah, the same like little butt crack showing and everything.
Yeah.
From Alien when she's going to go into the like hyper sleep pod.
Right. Which is why. Why?
Just because.
There's a couple of panty images in the Animatrix. She knocks out the operator.
Yeah.
Because she's like, fuck you for doing that to me.
Yeah, don't ever do that to me again.
But it is interesting like that he implanted memories in her.
Yeah. Because
that's a big part of Ghost in the Shell.
Okay,
like,
yeah.
Because her whole past that she thinks is her human past.
Right, is not.
Is not.
Real.
Right? Because it's been a long time since I saw that. But
me
I think
too.
I think she thinks she's a cyborg, but then finds out she's entirely a robot with AI.
She thinks she's part robot.
Right, because like, she has memories that are not hers.
Yeah.
That she realizes are not hers.
Mm-hmm.
And she has to deal with like, but I still feel those memories.
Yeah.
They're not real. That's kind of like what's happening here.
Yeah, like she's, because when she comes out of the simulation, she's like reeling.
Right.
She's experiencing like these emotions of like right. loss and betrayal and all this stuff.
Of someone that she didn't really
happened.
Love, right.
Yeah, you never knew this person.
And it's an interesting thing because they didn't do that to Neo. Like, mm-hmm. who does this training? Like, that seems like a
right,
really,
yeah,
it's to see if you're
it?
Loyal to our side.
Like, what point in the war was this happening? Like, were they losing a lot of people to
going
agents
back?
Who were going back? Like, what is this? And it also, like, it makes me think of, it's another, I don't know if it was intended to be this way, but it's sort of a meta commentary on watching a film to begin with, right?
Yeah.
Because we're crying over people we don't know.
We buy into
we're feeling feelings for these characters on screen who aren't real, but we're going along on the journey with them.
Right. We're completely entering the text
yeah.
ideologically and mentally and
yeah.
sort of believing it.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if that was another thing that the Merovingian was like commenting. I'm sure it was. He was commenting on everything in 4 because he's like, all you want is things that go like beep, 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 like talking about like phones.
Yeah.
And so it's like, is it a commentary on, I mean, 2 things. One, people not being invested in films when they're watching them anymore because they're like looking at their phones.
Mm.
And also the fact that this movie is going to be released on a streaming service
Maybe.
That you can watch at home and not be completely invested because
right.
you're not in a theater.
Well, one of the obvious like ways to read The Matrix is that The Matrix is cinema,
mm-hmm.
right? It's a text that we in some way symbolically enter and
mm-hmm.
we believe ideologically, you know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, Hollywood continuity editing puts us into scenes where we sort of buy into it. We,
mm-hmm.
you know, we believe what we're seeing and stuff. So there's, you know, I guess there's, I don't know, the Merovingian. It all comes back to him.
It always comes back to the Merovingian. It was a cool little short.
Yeah. Yeah.
World record.
This is a cool one.
This is awesome.
This is directed by Takashi Kaioke. I don't know if I'm saying this right. Excuse me. He worked on Ninja Scroll, the MTV show Liquid Television.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
Vampire Hunter D and the Metropolis anime.
Okay.
Based on the famous
the
anime.
Film?
No, based on the famous anime manga.
Oh, okay.
Which is based on the poster to the silent film.
Really?
Yeah. Not
so
the film itself.
Not the film itself, just like the design of it?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. That's really cool.
And that's done by, oh shit, hold on.
This looked like Zima Blue to me. It was just such a distinct animation style. It was so stylized. Everything's elongated.
The Metropolis manga is by Osamu Tezu, who's sort of like he also did Astro Boy. He's like the father of manga.
Wow.
And okay. He saw like, I think a poster for Metropolis and just made his own version of it.
Wow.
What's interesting though, I've read Metropolis, the manga.
Okay.
There's a scene with rats and they all look like Mickey.
Oh, wow. How did they get away with that? I guess they weren't as litigious back then.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really interesting. Anyway, this is the one that we were just talking about
the runner.
The runner.
Okay. So in this one, you have this like world-class runner who broke a world record and he was then caught up in like a doping scandal.
Was he? I didn't.
Yeah. It like,
I thought he like hurt himself.
Well, I'm pretty sure it was like he, because there's some like headline where it's like drugs or like steroids or something, where he basically wanted to prove he could do it without any help. Like it was just coming from him, and that's why he was so hell bent on doing this. So basically,
but the agents are watching him.
The agents are watching him because he's doing things that humans aren't supposed to be able to do, right? And so the most—it's an absolutely astounding thing. It's so cool. This guy has no skin in this game as far as the Matrix and agents and all this stuff. He just wants to run, and he wants to run fast, and he wants to do it faster than any human has ever done it before. Yeah. And he is so determined to reach beyond the bounds of human ability that he alters the Matrix and wakes himself up.
Right, he wakes up in the pod.
He wakes up
because from his own will.
He runs so fast he wakes up.
It's crazy.
Like, it's nuts. It's such a cool concept.
Yeah,
it's
really is.
This has nothing to do with the films as we know them.
No, right.
And it's just really cool. It's very, it's extremely creative. It's a totally new take on like what this is.
Yeah.
And the agents are after him and they're like running after him on the track.
Because the agents can turn into anybody. So they, when they're like turning into the people he's racing with.
Mm-hmm.
And they have the glasses, but they don't have the suits. They
have
more,
like dusters? What are they wearing?
They look different from, they kind of have like robes almost. Like they look different from what we know them to look. And we say the look of this is like also a very limited color palette. It's all browns and grays with little touches of yellow.
Oh, yellow,
Also, there's like a lot of like high contrast. Like there's a lot of darks, which let you see like the musculature of people. Mm-hmm. That's what probably was reminding you of Zima Blue.
Yeah,
because like you can see like people's muscles and like people are very elongated.
Very long, like their hands and their wrists and
which
everything.
Which is interesting
because
it's sort of the theme of stretching what a body
like,
can do.
Yeah, stretching what a body can do, stretching the limits.
There's
of
a
the
lot
Matrix.
Of like weird,
like things look out like really far away. Right. I don't know what that would be called.
Weird perspectives and weird, weird gestures. Like when his like manager or friend is talking to him, like he's got these weird hand gestures.
Yeah,
it's really interesting.
They move really strangely. They don't move like human beings.
Yeah.
How
do you read the ending? Because he comes out of the, which by the way, I forgot totally. Like I've remembered he got out and that was the end, but he doesn't. He gets out of the Matrix, but then he's back in the Matrix and he's in a wheelchair and he like can't walk anymore.
I thought he just woke up for a second and then went back to sleep. Like he just saw reality and then just went back to sleep because he just kind of pulled himself out for a second.
Right.
And then he hurt himself in the real world, like running this
his
fast.
His muscles like explode.
His like leg muscle pops.
Yeah.
So he paralyzes himself, I guess. And then he's sort of just being pushed down like a long tunnel or hallway or something. And this like nurse is pushing him and chatting it up.
And there's
like,
an agent watching him. And the agent's on the phone. And he's like, I think he's not going to be anymore.
Yeah. And then you just see he's not saying anything. And then I don't know. He maybe realizes
he
this isn't real.
Freedom.
Freedom.
And
yeah,
he makes himself stand up.
And you hear the agent go, sit down. And he just.
And then he falls.
Yeah.
And that's the last thing you see. So do you read it as he's totally defeated now or his will is so strong?
I think his will is so strong.
He's gonna
do
it
again. He's going to do it again. He's just so...
He won't stop.
He will not stop. Yeah.
It's incredible.
It's so cool. It's a very, very cool
just
one.
The idea of like the... You know, you think about like Neo's journey,
right?
And
there's other people
it's
having their own
thing.
Yeah, but he's having a purely physical journey that is taking him to the Matrix, outside of the limits of the Matrix.
Right.
It's very cool.
And you think about in the first Matrix, this is something that you don't see again in the sequels, but in the first Matrix, when they bring Neo out, all his muscles are atrophied. So they have to like do like this electroshock.
Yeah. I love that line. He's like, why do my eyes hurt? It's like, because you never used them before.
Oh, crazy. So like the idea of like, he's so... has such control over his body's so built within the Matrix that it has an effect of his body outside the Matrix. Because there's no, there's very little connection typically between your Matrix body and your real body.
Yeah. He pushes himself through to his real body.
Right.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Which I guess is not just purely physical, right? Because he's achieving mind over matter.
Yes.
They keep saying, you can't do this. No one can run that fast. And he's like, no, I'm going to because I want to. I choose to.
Right.
Like, I choose to run this fast.
Right. And they're trying to stop him. Like,
yeah.
The ages are trying to stop him. It seems like there are mechanisms in place trying to stop him.
Because humans can't be limitless, and he's pushing that.
Right, right, right. It's very, very cool. It's super cool. Oh, they do sort of like a kind of bullet time thing where when they show the running, they don't even try to show it as fast. It looks like he's just like running in slow motion.
One arm up, one arm down.
Yeah, it's just very, very, like, which is, I think it's just...
We're both doing running motions that you can't see, but we look ridiculous.
But I think it's an interesting choice to just be like, what are we going to draw him fast? Let's just do it. Let's just... make it like we could see all the movements and you just like know every he's little muscle fast.
Rippling. Yeah.
The next one is Kid Story. And this is the backstory of
the Jimmy kid. Olsen kid.
I know. Maybe if he wasn't 40 years old, I wouldn't find this character so grating.
He's clearly a man in his 30s and he's like, I'm 15 years old.
And he's like, oh, Neo G. Willikers, you're my hero.
Yeah.
And it's just like,
Keanu is so creeped out by him. He's not like, the character, just the actor. He's like, get this kid off the set. I don't like him.
You are creeping me out.
Oh, man.
But this is his backstory.
Yep. It looks like a sketchbook. It looks like it's done with like,
very thin lines, very like pencil kind of look.
You can see all the you can see the pencil marks on it, which is cool.
This is directed by Shinichiro Watanabe, who worked on Cowboy Bebop, Mobile Suit Gundam, and Lumen the Third.
Okay.
So, like, big stuff.
All these big names for anime.
Yeah.
Not that I know anything, but I recognize the titles, which is enough for like a non-anime person. That means it's big.
Yeah. We learned the kid's name in this. I forget what it is.
Oh, what's his name?
I forget. But it's just cool. He's just called the kid in the movie.
Yeah.
And then he dies in two. No, he dies in two or three. No, three.
No, he survives.
I thought he died.
No. That like gruff general right, Mifune, doesn't
he takes his
thing.
But I thought he dies.
No, he shoots the gate open.
Yeah.
And actually, when he shoots the gate open, he says, Neo, I believe. Which I never got because I never watched the Animatrix. But now that I've seen it, I'm like, oh, that's what he says right before he jumps off the building.
Yeah.
He's the one who runs into Zion and is like, the war is over.
Oh, right.
Yeah, it's...
Gee willikers.
Like, the machines are still there. They have not left yet. Right. And he's like, everyone, the war is over. And everyone's like, yay. I'm like, isn't this a little premature? Let's don't you think? Fuck. Yeah, it's like, let's have another rave. Let's do it.
No, this is, we rave when we're sad. We rave when we're happy. Hey,
we're always raving.
That's the Zion way.
Always be raving. That's so raving. I gotta go.
So it begins with the kid having a dream that he's jumping off a building.
Yeah.
And then there's not a lot to this. It's a lot like Neo's story. He's then on his computer talking to nobody. Yeah. I guess Neo. This one does have the voice of Keanu Reeves and Carrie-Anne Moss at the end. He's like, am I alone?
You don't see until the end that Neo typed that back, like, Neo. You're not alone.
You're not alone. Yeah. So then he goes to school, but any like as if he's got a crush on him on his in his little notebook he's drawing, like sketching Neo, like Trinity. Neo Trinity,
but it's weird because has he been speaking to them? It doesn't seem like he has been, but he knows these names.
Well, but in that world they're still famous hackers.
They're hacker legends.
Remember Trinity,
she hacked the IRS database, right. I guess to get her tax return information, right. Did they process it yet? Not yet. That was me last year checking my tax return number, like, did they come on? I need my return.
Yeah.
That's all she was
doing. And everyone thinks Trinity's a man.
And most men do.
Most men do.
Also that haircut. Lady.
Oh, come on.
It's all right.
So he goes to school. He's doodling about Neo.
It's cute.
He get his phone rings and his teacher's like,
I told you about phones in my class.
Which is interesting because like with with
characters
like that, you're like, is that just a teacher being a teacher or is that an agent? Where is control really coming from and where does it end?
But I guess a teacher is always... If you're in the Matrix and you're a teacher
and you believe
it... you're an element of control.
Right.
So it rings and then he turns it off.
And then it rings again.
He's like, but I turned it off. And then it's... Who is it? Neo?
Yeah, it's Neo.
It's Neo. And he's like, they're on to you. It's basically like the scene where Morpheus
calls him.
It's exactly the same
thing. He's like, they know that you know.
Yeah.
You have to run.
Then he goes away on a skateboard.
Yeah.
He skates through the school.
He's Bart Simpson.
He's just Bart Simpsoning all over the place. Because like the physics of it don't make sense. He's like jumping onto people and whatever.
I do like that when he's skateboarding, the world and the figures in the world seem to... they get blurrier. They seem to lose their... fidelity, which you could read as like the world is coming undone.
Right, because he's now realized everything he was looking for is true.
Then
he like climbs out a window. He climbs to the roof. The agents are already on the roof. And then he just lets go.
He believes.
And he goes, Neo, I believe. And then he wakes up.
Right.
Where if you die in the Matrix, you're supposed to die in real life. But he doesn't. He was rescued. He woke up.
Yeah.
And then Neo and Trinity are there. And they're talking about how like, oh, he's the only person who's self awoken, self-realized, self-actualized, something like that.
Except the guy in the last movie.
Yeah. Except that other
Neo
one.
We're like, what the fuck are you talking about? About that runner guy.
What about that guy?
Remember the runner guy from last week?
And 10 other people? Yeah.
How much time is there between part one and part two? Like a year? Months?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have a real firm grasp on that.
Because, like, there's that cool scene in two where they come back to Zion and, like, the people are waiting for Neo and they want to, like, worship him.
I would say at least a year.
Okay.
Because it seems like they've been going out on runs, coming back, hanging out for a half hour, going back on a run.
Right. They've been back and forth to Zion.
Yeah. Yeah, they have, like, apartments there.
Right, right. But I guess he's been freeing people.
We have not. Yeah, I guess he's been freeing people. That's what they've been doing and waiting for messages from the Oracle and doing all kinds of stuff. Right. Like figuring out how to end the war, I guess, while also waking people up. Something we did not talk about in last episode, but why were Trinity and Neo so horny for each other when they got back to Zion?
They were so ready to fuck.
They were not on different ships. It's like one of them stayed back in Zion and it was like they were reunited, or like one of them was on a different ship. They were on the same ship. They were just sleeping together in the same bed like a minute earlier. And now they're like, oh my God, we're home. We can finally do it.
I think that they're just, I don't think it's that they're home. I think that they're just so horny. They just want to fuck all the time.
All the time.
And just, they're
like, oh, this elevator ride. I can't wait to get back to our
I can't wait to husbands. Fuck you.
Like, you just came from, like, what are you talking about? You were just together.
I was talking in the last episode about how I don't think that they have great chemistry in the original trilogy. And, I mean, maybe it's just because they're so gross on top of each other. You know, people talk about the rave, but and make fun of the rave.
It's
intercut with them having a sex scene.
I think that's why I hate it. I'm like, what is this sex scene?
Because people are like raving in slow motion, and they're like, fuck it. And they're like going at it so hard. He's like eating her face. He's like, ah. And it's like, I guess they love each other.
Well, yeah, because they didn't get to bone after the elevator because he was like talking to all those people. Yeah, he's going to be Jesus, I guess.
I gotta go wash people's
feet
or whatever.
They like walk to the rave and he meets up with her there.
Yeah.
Like, didn't they just leave together? Whatever. Yeah. And she's like, follow me. I'm like, did they just go back to the room where they just came from?
Maybe
where are they right now?
Maybe Morpheus has a no fucking on the ship policy.
Like, absolutely no fucking on their ship. I won't have this happen again. Yeah.
I will separate you. Do not
He's
make
not
me
on the ship. We have work to do.
Right.
That's the only explanation.
Yeah. So
that's kid's story.
That's kid's story.
In a nutshell.
Yeah. What happened to the kid? I don't know.
He survived and then he wasn't around anymore. Although he seemed like a true kid, so he should have been just like, you know.
Just Steve Buscemi with the skateboard. Hey, fellow kids. He should have been there with Niobe.
He should have.
He should have been like, you remember kid?
He would have been
kid?
Like, you remember, like, he's old.
You remember
he's older
kid?
Than Niobe. He's a mummy.
We call him kid ironically now.
I mean, really, though, he was supposed to be a teenager in high school, so he would have only been in his 70s. He should be around. It's 60 years later. He would have been like 75 years old.
Yeah.
That's totally doable.
Yeah.
That's an age people are. And that's probably the age of the actor who played him.
He was 70 when he made the movie.
He's 75 now.
So the next one's Beyond.
I love this one.
This one is directed by Koji Miyamoto, who worked on Akira, Macross, and Kiki's Delivery Service.
Studio Ghibli.
Yeah.
Very cute.
And it's got a Ghibli look.
That's anime I know of.
Right. And great anime. Ghibli has like this really like great look of like natural blues, natural greens, very impressionistic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's all very pretty. It's all very calming to like look at.
Mm-hmm. This is the most like chill wave.
Yeah,
like Matrix it's story. Chill. It's super chill.
It's just a vibe, this whole
thing. It is. It is. So
she's in her panties, of
she's
course.
Yeah, of course. She's in her underwear. She's on the phone. And
she's got a star on her shirt and
a star
on her
on
cheek.
Her face. I love that. And she's calling for her cat Yuki.
And her name is Yoko.
She's Yoko and Yuki.
Yuki.
You know.
Cats are big
in the Matrix.
In the Matrix, mm-hmm. in the movies and these shorts, mm-hmm. they appear a lot.
Mm-hmm. I wonder wonder why that is. Is it because, like, all the mythology surrounding cats, they're supposed to be of two worlds? Like, cats are always, like, in between creatures. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, even in Coraline, I'm thinking of, like, the cat can go back and forth in between the worlds. In Egyptian mythology, the cats were, like, underworld creatures.
Yeah. There's that line in the Keanu Reeves classic Constantine.
Oh, Constantine! Where, that's like, right.
They use a cat for something and
he says
they're halfway in anyway.
Cats are just in between characters.
He said recently on Colbert, Colbert was like, what would you like to do again? He's like, I'd love to play Constantine again.
I love Constantine.
I love Constantine too.
I really love that movie.
It's a good movie.
Yeah, I enjoy it. I enjoy it front to back. This is the next episode we have to do, the Constantine episode.
Let's talk about how Keanu Reeves has become like, he's just like, he's in pop culture now. He's like your deep uncle. He's like everybody. He's just like sweet mensch. Everyone talks about how nice he is. There's all these stories.
Pictures of him like posing with female fans, and he doesn't put his hand on them, and not in a creepy way. He just kind of like hovers in a very respectful way.
You just hear about how he's like the nicest guy. Because
he's just lovely.
Yeah,
he just seems lovely.
Whenever he's on talk shows, they ask like Colbert will ask him deep questions like what happens when we die, Keanu?
Like, Can you tell me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's become, it's interesting because
and he's like just the internet darling because like he's dating an age appropriate woman.
Yeah.
Like, what? Right. I mean, that's all it takes. The bar is pretty low, but we love him. We love him.
I mean, to be as famous as he is for long and to not be problematic.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's pretty wild.
It is. It's pretty wild. It's true.
Yeah. Yeah. He's awesome. I think he's gotten better. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I finished my statement, but I was saying in the last episode that I love him and I think he's a great movie star. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's a great actor. I just mean, you know, like he was in Dracula.
Okay. We know where the bastard sleeps. Right. I love that line.
And even he goes, I shouldn't have been in that movie.
Aw, no, Keanu, I love you.
I could not hold on to an English accent more than a minute. So he knows that, but he's a movie star. He's fascinating to look at. He reminds me of like Jeff Goldblum or like Peter Falk. Like these people that are like, you don't believe them as characters.
They're just them in the
movie.
They're
just fascinating people. Yeah. They have whatever the it factor is. Yeah. And they're fascinating.
Mm. Much like The Matrix itself, we have created two episodes where you have to listen to the supplemental material. So like this one is the supplemental to the last episode.
Right.
So we don't finish our thoughts in the last one. Yes. We've got to get to them in this one.
Mm-hmm. You bet.
All right, so beyond.
Yes.
So Yoko's looking for her cat Yuki. She's getting nervous. She's asking around the neighborhood. And then there's like these like little neighborhood urchin kids who hang out. And they're like, oh, she's probably like over there.
In the haunted house.
That
has a rainbow over it.
Yeah. They're like, oh, look, there's a rainbow today. Like it changes all the time.
Because it rains in the house, but not outside the house.
Yeah, very, very cool. So it's a haunted house. But really what we discover is it's just like a crazy glitch in the Matrix.
Right, just
like,
buggy.
It's buggy as hell. And things all kinds are floating. Of things happening. Yeah,
like you'd see in a video game, things are floating.
Like, yeah,
It's raining inside. Mm-hmm. Things are sort of glitching in and out of existence. Yeah.
These kids, really they cool. go there to play because they're, you know, they break glass and then the glass reforms again and they throw it again. They jump off the building and then they hover. Don't hit the. It's so much fun. There's like a little girl playing there with them.
Yeah.
It just like becomes the neighborhood spot for the kids to like get into mischief.
Yeah, it's really, when Yoko goes there, she finds the cat Yuki, which maybe the cat's drawn to it.
Yeah. You get the feeling the cat is like interested in what's going on in the house.
They know what's happening.
Yeah.
And
she just gets like fascinated by these anomalies. She chills there. She chills with the kids. The kids are so cute. Yeah. They're just like getting into trouble and being fun kids.
Who wouldn't love a little haunted house like that?
I know.
I mean, they call it a haunted house, but there's nothing scary about it.
It's about just... it. Except that one room that she looks into where it's just like a black void.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But that doesn't really read as scary, but at that point that the agents are coming in anyway, so it's sort of like we gotta get out of here.
It reminds me of like, remember like when you'd play like an old video game and there would be a glitch, like in Mario you'd get stuck in a wall or something.
Oh yeah.
You'd just be there glitching out and it's just the weirdness of being in between. Mm-hmm. Like it's what it is.
Yeah.
And again, going back to what we said in the last episode, you gotta listen to every episode of PCMC. It's a Matrix explanation for a real world phenomenon. Mm-hmm. Like maybe when we call things haunted houses, it's just glitches in the matrix.
I like that. I like that explanation. And again, it's something that's very removed from the movie series. So
right, because it doesn't. Even though we're in the Matrix, it's not that dreary green. Mm-hmm. Like you see, like typically in the Matrix trilogy, you don't see real like fauna or flora. I mean to say, but in this you see it's Ghibli-ish. So you see grass and you see birds
like flying in slow motion. It's really cool. She like kind of, I don't know, she really like trips out in the house and she like kind of falls sideways, but like she falls in slow motion so she doesn't get hurt. And they're just having a grand old time. And then
agents come.
Agents show up. They're
like we're exterminators.
Exterminators. Like, everybody get out. There's bugs.
And they just basically
or rats
scrub
or whatever it.
It
is. They scrub the house and then
they fix the glitch, basically.
They fix it. They come but everybody remembers. Like, all the kids remember and she remembers and they're drawn to it again and they come back the next day, but it's just a parking lot.
Yeah.
They pave paradise and put up a parking lot.
Yeah.
Man. But they remember it. And so it sort of hints that there's seeds of an awakening there for those characters.
Well yes. But I also would say that I like the idea that even if you don't get woken up, you can still enjoy life in the Matrix. Like, there's still things in that reality that are worth experiencing and are good.
You know? You don't get the sense that they're miserable in their lives. No, like, they not all seem at all. To be having a good time.
Right.
Yeah.
They're, you know, certainly cats are.
Cats know what's up.
Cats enjoy life no matter what. I mean, they've enslaved us and we don't even realize it. All right, the next one is A Detective Story.
Okay.
This is directed by the same director as Kid Story.
I can see that. It looks like a pencil drawing.
Right.
The artistic style is similar.
It's black and white with just a couple
of... It looks like Sin City or something.
Yeah. It's got this weird still effect. Like, it looks like old stills. It's got a lot of green.
It's like graphite.
Yeah, yeah. Which is interesting because in a lot of other things in the Matrix, you see the green binary code as like the creation of the text that they're in.
Yeah.
So it's almost like an analog version of that, all this green.
Yeah.
It's like reminding you constantly this is a text.
Right.
But it's like a noir.
It's a hardboiled detective story.
He's got a cat.
He's got the cat.
He gets a call from an agent. They want, can you find Trinity?
Yeah, it's Trinity.
He thinks Trinity's a man.
Of course.
Because men always do.
It's just so interesting. It's not interesting. It's funny to me that agents would employ a detective.
Right.
Who is himself a part of the Matrix. Like, he's plugged in. Why would they even bother?
Right, it's
fine. So this story can happen.
Right. But no, isn't she behind it or something? He finds her and...
She says she would have woken him up.
Oh, so okay.
That she could have. But because he's a human being in the Matrix, he starts turning into an agent because the agents can, like, hack anybody.
This made me think about something. Then why not do that to Neo?
Why not do it to anybody if you're hooked into the Matrix? But I guess because the body isn't in a pod anymore. I think it has to do with the pods.
But then why even...
I know. Because I've thought about this as well. I was like, why can't you just hack? Because they can hack anybody. They can go from being on top of the truck to being the truck driver.
Why arrest Neo? Why not just become him and then kill yourself or whatever?
Right. Because when Neo is still in a pod, they should have been able to do that.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, no. We're unraveling the whole thing.
Yeah. The only color you see in this, it's all black and white because it's supposed to be like a Neo, a noir film.
A neo-noir.
The only color you see is at one point somebody who tried to find Trinity, who's insane now for some reason, on the wall in red it says find the Red Queen.
Right, but she's the Red Queen,
I guess. And at the end he lights a cigarette and the fire of the cigarette, you could see the orange of it.
Yeah, that's the only thing in color besides the red writing.
Besides the red,
In the Matrix, the first movie, is her, like, screen name the Red Queen?
Oh, maybe. Because that's a... Isn't that another Alice in Wonderland reference?
Yeah, but maybe not. Because then how would she be known as Trinity? I don't know. I just assume that was, like, their screen name. Because she's the one who tells him follow the White Rabbit.
Right. Oh, okay.
I don't know. It's a cool looking thing.
It's the most contrived in a way. Like, you know... The rest are all super, super cool and stylistic and beautiful. And this is one that's like, you know, it's one of those pre-made aesthetics, mm-hmm. like Westerns. It's mm-hmm. like, okay, how about a Matrix noir?
Right, right, right.
And it's
right.
like, so here you've got the voiceover of the detective. You've got the detective looks like a detective. Mm-hmm. You've got...
But it is meta in its own way because he says at the beginning of the narration, he's like, I wanted to be a detective, like the Maltese Falcon. I thought it would be cool. Like he's just referencing other texts, right. like detective texts.
And I kind of like the idea that Trinity is kind of like the femme fatale.
Mm-hmm. She does end up causing his demise, like a true femme fatale. Yeah.
She shoots him and I guess injures him fatally, but then he's alive long enough to shoot at an agent.
Yeah.
She pulls a bug out of his eye. She's real freaky. One of the things that's the most upsetting to me in the original Matrix film is when they pull the bug out of Neo's
belly button.
Yeah. It upsets me all the time.
It's really gross. It's really visceral.
You can't help but imagine what that would feel like.
Yeah.
And you're like, this is just have a hole?
Both when he has it implanted and when he gets it taken out of him.
Yeah. Okay, this next one is real freaky.
Matriculated.
Matrix-ulated.
This is the Aeon Flux one.
Yes, it's directed by Peter Chung, creator of Aeon Flux.
Yeah, you didn't even have to tell me because the second...
you see their hair?
It was like, oh, that's Aeon Flux.
Yeah, and she looks like a dominatrix and everybody's just lean.
She's got the super high
and,
panties.
Yeah.
Everyone's hip bones are out.
Yeah.
It's Aeon.
Yeah, so you've got... And this looks long very and pointy. Geiger. Like all the backgrounds look super Geiger.
Like a lot of spines happening. Mm-hmm. This one is very cool ideas. It introduces extremely cool
this
ideas.
This one gets so trippy.
Mm-hmm.
She's on a beach in Zion, in the real world, and two what they call runners, two machines start chasing her.
Mm-hmm.
So they're built to chase. They're built to run.
Yeah.
Which is important because when they create the virtual reality world for it, they run around like get it to chase them.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that's what it wants. That's likes, what it likes to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's a real interesting...
They look like bugs with antenna.
Right.
But the design is super cool because then when they're in, like, attack mode, when they're not running, they, like, flip onto the antenna and they, like, turn upside down and then become, like, a different looking creature.
Right. And they capture it.
Right. So she, like, lures them. She's, like, the bait. Right. Yes. So she runs them into the facility and then hides. And then another machine with green eyes, so you know it's good, comes out and like immobilizes them or kills one and then keeps the other.
Right.
And then they have their own Matrix.
They basically do to it what the machines do to them.
They plug it in.
Right. But they want it to choose their side.
It wants it to choose. Yeah, yeah. They're like, we have to give it a choice. And this is, you know, this is pre-4 by a couple movies. Yeah. So it's interesting because they're introducing ideas there that they follow through on.
But they also are dealing with the idea of free will in the original trilogy because she says, well, how is it a choice if we're tricking it anyway? We it's not really a choice. We need it to do this.
Yeah,
so she even problematizes the idea of like it's not really
a choice. It's the illusion of choice. Right. Yeah. But they bring it onto their side through the illusion of offering it a choice to join them. So they all... The whole crew
plugs in. And here's where shit gets weird.
Yeah. The animation style changes.
Because it's a virtual reality world created for the machine, but it doesn't look anything like our world.
Remember like Transformers had a Saturday morning show where it was like Beast Wars or something?
Yeah.
That's what this animation looked like for the robot in the thing. It was like a shiny metallic bug
It's interesting.
Bug
they
thing.
Give him like a humanoid body.
Yeah. And he seems to, well, he, I mean, this machine seems to have like a bond with the runner character or like falls in love with or believes that they're like connected in some way.
What do you mean? Like,
because.
But the gold thing inside is the runner.
No, I know. That
the her.
Is the Aeon Flux character.
Because she's
it chases
running
for
him.
Her.
Like,
yeah,
that's
yeah.
What
but
they
there's
do.
Like the other two characters who are like having sex all over the place inside of them.
And they look like machines too.
They look like machine
versions of themselves.
Yeah. They look different. They look weird.
And it's just a weird liminal space of like colors.
Yeah, it's super psychedelic looking in there. Right. It almost looks like a kaleidoscope.
Right.
The space doesn't make sense. There's like you can jump into walls and stuff.
Yeah, it's super trippy. Lots of stuff happens.
But he I'm going to say he for the sake of this conversation, but he chases her around and then she like...
Well, there's something heteronormative about it because he is chasing her. I think it's coded as male.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that. That's probably why.
There's something heteronormative about like the way it's chasing her. Mm-hmm. Like it looks like he wants her.
Mm-hmm.
I guess they're trying to, the machine is programmed to chase, to run, which is all mm-hmm. it can do. So I guess they're trying to get it to feel something.
Mm-hmm. Or like a bond, yeah. like a protective bond, I guess. But I think it ends up, like, it reads more romantic. Like, if yeah. he's into this
yeah.
person. So then the facility gets attacked because the runner set up a flare.
Right, yeah.
That attracts, like,
in the
sentinels.
Real world, the sentinels come to get them.
Yeah, so they completely destroy the facility. They kill everyone. There's, like, a battle ensues. And the machines that they switched over to their side fight on their behalf. But
she says, like, while she's being attacked, she says, like, protect me.
Yeah.
And he does. Yeah.
By, like, jacking her in again.
Right.
And now they're just two of them together.
And then she freaks out.
And she loses it. She's, I feel like she loses it too quickly, but it's a short, so yeah. I guess.
She's like, this isn't what I...
She's like, and then dies. She just right. like wills herself to die or what? I'm not sure. Or she gets yeah. killed on the outside. I'm not sure. She didn't look injured, but I think she just like went...
I thought she killed herself. I thought she got killed on the outside.
Oh, okay. And that's what happened.
But definitely like...
She went crazy and died.
Right. She doesn't really want to be with it in this alternate world. But he wanted to go right back to that.
Yeah, he was like, hey, I'm cool running around after
and
you.
And now they're all dead and he's just alone
and
sad.
He's alone on the beach where she was yeah. watching. Yeah. But like all their hard work, all that whole facility trying to switch them over,
yeah.
all lost.
You get the sense that they are not in league with the other people we know, like Morpheus yeah, yeah. and Neo. They're doing their own weird shit.
Yeah, yeah. But that's so much of what makes the Animatrix cool. It's like so many side quests, so like many people doing their own thing.
It opens up the world
yeah,
a lot.
Yeah, very much so. It's sort of like Star Wars Visions in that way.
Yes, yes. So the last one is The Final Flight of the Osiris.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the one. This is directed by Andrew R. Jones. He's not an anime guy. He works on... he's sort of an animation supervisor.
Okay.
And he works on things that you wouldn't think of as animation, like iRobot and Avatar and Superman Returns and World War Z, stuff that has CG in it.
Okay.
And this is the only 3D sort of CG one. And this is, we talked about this. This is the one that takes place right before Reloaded,
yeah.
They are a ship in Zion and they see that the Sentinels, there's thousands of them and they've mm-hmm. got a giant drill and they're going to drill down into
Zion. Yeah, so they have footage of it and they have a transmission basically saying like, hey, they're coming. You got to
right, which is where
something.
We begin in Reloaded.
Right, because they're having a meeting about... the footage that they found.
Right.
And then we'll get to the sexy sword fight in a second. But basically, they're headed back to Zion. And in the course of heading back, they get attacked by Sentinels. And they're going to be overwhelmed by the Sentinels. There's no way they're going to survive. So they jack... Oh, God. What's the character's name? She goes into the Matrix and puts it into a mailbox, which is a drop point. And then in the video game Enter the Matrix, you as Niobe have to go to the post office to retrieve this
right.
footage, this last drop.
Yes. I don't know.
Which is cool because you find out then that, you'd only know this playing the video game, that Captain Thaddeus was very distrustful of drop points. And so for him to use one meant that it had to be extremely important.
Right.
And that's why...
They know they're fucked.
Yeah, that's why Niobe goes to seek out this
It's the Rogue
yeah.
One.
Yes, it's the Rogue One. Yeah, absolutely. It's a suicide mission.
Right. They're the first ones there. They're fucked. They're like, all right, we gotta get
this info.
We are
back.
Clearly not the lead characters here, but we gotta get the information to the lead characters.
So yeah. So they see this happening and ultimately they drop off this communication, like they're coming. You gotta do something. In between, and this is how we open, they decide they need to have a sexy sword fight.
Yes. Well, in their defense, they don't see the Sentinels after the sword fight. They get pulled out of the sexy sword fight by an alarm.
Yes.
That Sentinels are nearby.
But they know this is, like, not good. Like, this is, there's really bad stuff happening. Like,
Janine,
Zion's about to be overwhelmed. And
Janine,
they're like, well, there's always time.
Janine. Let's look at the themes. These people are horny.
Oh my God. I guess it's like why Morpheus has a rule on his ship, because people are always having sexy sword fights all the time.
He should say, like, you want to see what happened to the Osiris? You want that to happen here?
You want that
to happen?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
You start having sexy sword fights?
And the ship gets destroyed.
Yeah. Yeah. That's how 99% of these ships go down.
People are too distracted by their sexy sword fights.
Fucking
So she's wearing like basically nothing, like a little red, right, like Chun-Li outfit. Because
again, one of the major motifs is panties.
Panties. And
they both peek at each other.
The captain, they're peeking through their sexy little blindfolds and they're cutting off their clothes while they're jumping all around and fighting.
Right. It's a sexy game of we're sparring, but we're cutting each other's clothes off.
Yeah.
But we're blindfolded. So
so we can't see our nudity.
We can't see the nudity we're achieving.
Because we might crash if we do.
Right.
And then right before she goes into the matrix, she's like, I peeked. And he's like, so did I.
Ha-ha.
Have they never had sex?
I have no idea. This is just, there's the foreplay in this world.
Virgin energy throughout the matrix is something we have not discussed. Despite all the like fetish wear and club scenes, there's a real big virgin energy raging throughout.
Do you think Neo fucked in the matrix? Or you think he was a virgin and he didn't have sex until in the real world?
Oh. Ooh. You can sort of read him as like an asexual character inside the matrix.
I mean, it would also make thematic sense, right? Because there isn't any procreation happening, right?
There's no real procreation happening, yeah.
It's all cloning and shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is not totally shown how they do that.
Mm.
And there's also a couple of characters. There's a character in the first movie who's like, oh, I'm not clone. I'm a pure
homegrown human.
So I guess his parents were both awoken. And
they were must have been awoken and then, you know, had a baby. Oh, did you? That's another thing.
Yeah.
Was it Reloaded or actually she's in both Reloaded and Revolutions. The like doctor who's attending to Bane.
The redheaded one?
Yeah. You know who that is?
No.
It's the mom from the Babadook.
Really?
Yeah. I recognized her immediately. I was like, there she is. Just don't let it in.
Yeah.
I wish the Babadook showed up
Bane
in these movies.
So I know. Oh my God. That would make so
queer
much sense.
Icon.
I mean, how is that different from the Merovingian? Like the like he's got a Babadook in his crew.
That car chase would have been so much better if it was twin Babadooks.
Well, that was an episode of What We Do in the Shadows, right? They go to a party, it's like there's a Babadook. Oh, queer icon, the Babadook.
Mm-hmm.
We stand.
We stand. We stand all the queer icons. Baby Grinch, the Babadook. This episode's gone off the rails. It's so late.
Just the Merovingian's just like, there's my werewolf and here's my Babadook. Neo's just creeped out.
So Neo dresses like a Babadook, though.
Yes, he does.
Oh no.
Yeah. All the leather.
The Babadook is about
so
grief.
Much leather in the original trilogy.
Yeah, leather and latex.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah.
Absolutely love it. It's a good look. It's fun.
You know, thinking about how like recently people have said, you know, these Marvel movies, they don't have sex in them. They're sexless.
Mm-hmm.
This is a major blockbuster franchise that's horny as hell.
It's so horny.
Think about it. Would you ever see a sex scene in a Star Wars movie? There's a huge sex scene.
There's multiple pregnancies in Star Wars movies, and they don't ever have
sex. You see no fucking.
Lord of the Rings, there's no sex.
Right.
All these major.
The second movie begins with a sex scene.
It's a full-on raving
fuck
sex
fest.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's a horny movie. It's a horny movie series.
Well, let's see. Bound is pretty horny, their first movie.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I thought it was known for being an erotic thriller.
Yeah, I mean,
is there any
other kind? Fingering going on?
Oh my God, that's big virgin energy, though. We're gonna write fingering movies.
Well, you know, now we're talking about Sex in the City. Look, I don't like this one because in Patrick H. Willems' rewrite of he says this should be the beginning of two. This would be a better way to start too.
Yeah, I could see this being like a cold open.
Yeah, it actually would be a good way to start.
Yeah, because then you're like, what? Who? Who
because,
are these people?
Because the way it begins is like, you know, and as we all know, they are digging toward us. Like,
yeah, I was like, what?
We didn't know that at all.
What?
Yeah.
We've never seen Zion. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know where that information would have been best delivered, but I guess... Like Zion, this city you heard about in the Matrix. It's like if the war was over tomorrow, that's where the party would be. That's all we've ever heard.
Yeah.
It's the last free city.
Yeah. You don't see Zion in the first movie.
No, you don't. You don't see it at all.
There's just a ship, right?
Just a ship.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's sort of a mythical place. And I think, honestly, we're going back to it. I think that's part of why the second and third movies feel disappointing, it's because you finally see this place you heard about, and it's kind of drab.
It's just a cave.
Yeah. And it's like,
it's very claustrophobic.
It's not a party city. I mean, they have,
they party a lot.
They do. They rave all the time, but there, it's just like, I don't know, everyone's following rules, and
it becomes like, you know, I feel like in the narrative spectrum, super trippy philosophy mm-hmm. is at the complete other end of military precision.
Mm.
It feels like Star Trek. It's like there's captains and military
councils,
and we're having
they kind of make a mistake about like they make a mistake in the vein of Star Wars where it becomes boring when you go to Zion. It's like a very prequel energy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It does have prequel energy, except again, no fucking in the prequels. You would buy Anakin and Padme so much more if they fucked.
Oh yeah, they're teenagers, they're kids.
Yeah, let them fuck.
They're horny.
I want to see Luke and Leia be conceived.
There's so much grinding in Reloaded.
Oh yeah, lots of grinding.
Oh my god,
the machines.
I feel like I was at a sports fest dance,
folks. In the future, they still listen to techno.
They sure do. What other music is there?
And now we will listen to classic music from centuries ago, the Chemical Brothers.
Oh, man.
Well, we did it.
Did we? We did.
I think we did, yeah.
Sure.
So this was the Animatrix from 2003.
It's cool. It is cool. Even if you don't revisit the Matrix series, you should just check this out. If you're familiar enough with the Matrix, you will have no problem getting into it. It's just cool. There's so many independent little things happening here. It's definitely a recommendation if you're a fan of Love, Death, and Robots.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. It's cool animation. It's cool. It starts with the Second Renaissance, so you could just watch it on its own and understand. Because starting that way lets you know what the Matrix is.
Yeah.
And then you kind of could read all the other movies, sort of easily understand what it is.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of could stand on its own.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know what? It was a cool idea. Later on, they did this with The Dark Knight. There was, between Batman Begins and The Dark Knight, these animated shorts that Nolan produced. And it was similar. It was a bunch of shorts done by anime people.
Oh, cool.
That bridged the gap. And did the same thing. Like some
it's
of the
kind of like what he's been
like
up to.
Some of the characters
movies.
In The Dark Knight were introduced in those. Like that. Like, what's her name? Rodriguez, the one detective that is good, but she's like, he threatened my mother.
Yeah.
You learn who she is in the animation and stuff. I'm for it.
Me too.
I'm about it.
I think it's worthwhile. I think it holds up on its own.
So on HBO Max, has like a whole little like Matrix section. And watch it.
Yeah, absolutely. Check it out.
Well, this has been PCMC. I'm Mike Bongiorno. I'm joined by Janine Gagliardi.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being had. And
I've been had.
You've been had.
This is all a prank.
You can find PCMC everywhere podcasts are available. That is Apple Podcasts. That is Stitcher. That is Spotify.
And recently YouTube.
YouTubes.
That's right. But no digital self images yet.
No.
So, just for listening.
We end every episode by saying...
The Merovingian. No. We say, go bye-bye.